Are you ready to jump into some true crime docs, crime thrillers, and more? Check out our website for an extensive list of our favorite movies and shows at thesirenspodcast.com/whatwewatch and find our favorite true crime and thriller books and authors, some covered on the show, at thesirenspodcast.com/authoralley. You can even find special deals for Amazon Music, Audible, Discovery Plus, Paramount Plus, Showtime, and even Grubhub. If you're looking to jump in immediately, check out our pinned Facebook post for some streaming service free trials on us.
You're listening to Sirens, a true crime podcast brought to you by the Sirens Network. This podcast contains explicit content, so listener discretion is advised. The opinions expressed on this podcast are solely the views of the hosts and do not reflect the views of affiliates, associates, or sponsors of this podcast.
This is Sirens,
a true crime podcast.
According to Jana Larson, Pavitt's daughter, her dad persuaded her to call Rob from an untraceable phone. Oh, there you go. That's why. Well, and claimed that Brenda was in the hospital in Norman, Oklahoma, and needed him immediately. And then an unknown male caller phoned Rob that morning, the same. I don't know who the unknown male was. I never saw anywhere where anyone admitted that they were the unknown male caller or knew the unknown male caller. I am going to assume that it was probably Pavitt just doing a voice or something. I don't know. But anyway.
So during the divorce hearing, 5 days after the break incident, Rob meets Brenda for their divorce proceedings. He ends up giving her everything in hopes of making her happy enough to not try anything again. You poor man. So holy sad. Shit. Yeah. She takes the house.
It's like all he could do.
So she takes the house with a paid off mortgage, the kids, and the money. But he refuses to leave Brenda on as the beneficiary to his life insurance, you think?
Don't
insisting
blame him.
It should be changed to his kids. He's right. She reportedly gets very angry and lashes out. She can be heard screaming, "It's mine."
Oh my gosh.
Tries to remove Brenda from his life insurance policy and make his brother the new beneficiary. Pavitt, however, told Rob the policy couldn't be changed because Brenda owned it. It was later discovered that Brenda and Pavitt had attempted to transfer ownership of the insurance policy to Brenda without Rob's knowledge by forging his signature and backdating it to March 2001.
This poor, poor man. Oh my gosh.
I mean, how can you go through like 30 years of being together? You just, oh boy, what?
Yeah, I think at that point, what was it? It's like 18 or 17 or 18 years at this point that they'd been together.
See? What the fuck?
I don't know.
She was like at 40, right? She was like 40.
Yeah, like early-ish 40s.
So, not willing to take Pavitt's word, Rob called Pavitt's supervisor, who assured him that he was the owner of the policy. Rob confided to the supervisor that he thought Pavitt and his wife were trying to kill him. When Pavitt discovered Rob had spoken to his boss, he flew into a rage, warning Rob not to try to get him fired from his job.
Or else I'll kill you. Go ahead and just freaking say it.
Yeah, no shit. Or else what? Or what, motherfucker? Or else I'll have all the more free time to actually plot this out. At this point, Brenda and Pavitt believed their forgery worked when in fact it did not. So he's having this conversation with the supervisor and like Pavitt's like, haha, gotcha, but didn't gotcha.
Exactly. Did not. Did not gotcha.
Did not gotcha. I really wish things had worked out differently. The upcoming parts I hate.
I know. So, Thanksgiving week. Rob goes to pick up his kids for Thanksgiving. It's his turn. to have them for this particular holiday. According to Brenda, she met Rob in the driveway and she asked him if he would come into the garage and light the pilot light on the furnace for her because it had gone out. Prosecutors believe that when Rob bent down to light the furnace, Pavitt jumped out from nowhere and shot him, then handed Brenda the 16-gauge shotgun that they believe he was shot with. She took a second shot at Rob, and her shot is the one that actually killed him. This is a freaking 16-gauge shotgun, y'all. Oh my God. And it was up close and personal. So Pavitt then pulls out a .22 and shoots Brenda in the arm in an effort to make it look like she is a victim as well, and then takes off. Brenda then calls 911. I don't know if you heard the 911 call, but I did.
No!
Yeah.
What?
She is like in no way distressed when she calls 911. She is like super calm. It's kind of weird. Like, as a 911 operator, I should say previous 911 operator, when someone would call and they've been married to a human for 17 years and they're not freaking the fuck out because he's just been murdered, there's something wrong. And she was just like cool and collected. She said, "My husband's been shot. Please send help." Basically almost just like that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And the operator was like, "I'm sorry, what happened?" And she said, two men in black masks shot my husband. And then they shot me and I need help now. Send to..." And then she just gives the address. It's like so... I don't know what the word is. Nonchalant? It was very weird.
That's the level of shock that happens once your adrenaline wears off. When you just go stoic. Oh. And you're like, "Nope, nope. That didn't fucking happen. This isn't happening."
Well, you know? Yeah, but I mean...
Not immediate. That's later.
Yeah, exactly. That usually happens, you know, later once you get somebody to the hospital, like, or they're on their... the way to the hospital, like, it's not while they're calling 911.
Yeah.
That's just... Mm. So, when police arrived, Brenda told them that two armed masked men dressed in black had come into the garage and attacked Rob and then shot him and then shot her as she was trying to run away from them. And then they fled the scene. So, to police, almost immediately, her behavior seemed strange. She was seemingly hyperventilating when she spoke to the police and then all of a sudden would just stop and get really calm. And this was like from an interview from one of the police officers.
She forgot to keep hyperventilating.
Yes, that's kind of what happened. You're like, so she was like, "Oh my God, I have to pretend like I'm losing my shit." And then she would forget and just be like really calm and nonchalant. And then she would like freak out again. Like, and she would do this hyperventilating breathing, like, and then she would just like stop. And the police were like, "I have never seen this in my career. People don't do this. This is not what happens." And
you're being a weird lady.
She also noted by this particular policeman, she also showed no concern for her husband whatsoever. The police said that she didn't even ask them one single time if he was dead or alive.
Oh no.
That's the first thing I'd be asking. Did the medics get to him? Is he okay? Where are you taking him? None of that happened. Another weird thing was that the kids were still there in the home. And they were actually found in a bedroom watching television that someone had turned the volume up on the TV like extremely high. so, you know, they couldn't hear anything outside the bedroom. They had no idea what was happening, what was going on. They also noted that it didn't appear as if there were any bags packed at all. They were supposed to go stay with their dad for a week for Thanksgiving, and they didn't have anything packed or ready for it. So they also found that odd, as if she wasn't really planning on sending them there. Uh-huh. So they're like immediately suspicious.
As you should be. Investigators were told that Rob owned a 16-gauge shotgun, but that Brenda had refused to let him take it when he moved out. They searched the Andrews home, but didn't find the shotgun. The next door neighbors were out of town when the murder took place, but upon coming back home, they found odd things askew in the house and called police. A search of the Andrews next door neighbor's home revealed there was no forced entry, and someone had entered the attic through an opening in a bedroom closet. A spent 16-gauge shotgun shell was found in the bedroom floor, and several 22 caliber bullets were found in the attic. What the fuck? Why? What are you doing? What the fuck
That's
are you doing?
That's not suspicious at all.
So you just took those things and you left them in a floor? Like, some of them made it to the attic and some of them are in the bedroom floor? Like, I'm so confused. Like,
I think they fell out of pockets.
Something. You're dumb.
Off your rocker.
Yeah. Anyways, so the neighbors had left Brenda a key to their house, and the shotgun shell found in the neighbor's home was the same brand and gauge as the shell found in the Andrews garage. The assumption was that after the murder, the killer had taken refuge in their home to wait for police to leave, this person being Pavitt, who was given the key by Brenda. So they kill him, they go hang out at the neighbor's house like you do.
Why not?
Fuck it. I have this great plan. They just so happen to be gone. Oh, dear God. The next piece of incriminating evidence came from Pavitt's daughter, Jana, who had lent her car to her father on the day of the murder after he'd offered to have it serviced. When her father returned the car the following morning, Jana realized it hadn't been serviced and found a 22 caliber bullet on the floorboard.
Man, they're not good at not leaving evidence behind.
What is this, Hansel and Gretel? Are you kidding me? Shit, this almost seems on purpose. Leaves. You're dumb in every room you go into. Oh, Jesus. Oh.
Instead of breadcrumbs, it's bullets.
Oh my god, 22. If you've ever owned a 22, that shit happens. Like, I have 22s. I have 22 bullets like every fucking where. There's like one in my cup holder, there's one in this dresser drawer, there's one in my desk drawer. They're just everywhere. They're like bobby pins. I don't know where the fuck they come from or why they don't hang out where they're supposed to go. But exactly. It's true. Like, here's exactly. If you're gonna fuck somebody up with a 22 caliber gun, check yourself, because those things go everywhere.
You break yourself.
They're everywhere. Oh, stupid. Okay.
That's funny.
So the 22 caliber round in Jana's car was the same brand as the three 22 caliber rounds found in the neighbor's attic. Pavitt told her to throw it away. Investigators later learned that Pavitt had purchased a handgun the week before the murder. Oh my god. Mm-hmm. Right. I've got plans for this baby.
So many breadcrumbs.
Breadcrumbs. So
I feel like they thought that this was extremely well planned out and thought out, and it was in fact not.
Just ridiculous. Like, you have no, it's like the when our powers combine. Nothing fucking spectacular happens. Absolutely.
I needed that laugh. I needed that.
This isn't the Air Force, my guy. Okay, you can't just tap, just leave shit every fucking where. Like, people are gonna figure it out. Anyway, so Rob's shotgun is never recovered, nor is the shotgun that killed him.
It was determined that the 16-gauge, or he was killed by a 16-gauge shotgun. He also owned a 16-gauge shotgun that was never recovered, nor was the murder weapon.
They can't find either. Yeah. I'm not saying they're the same, but I've never seen them in the
But I'm saying
the
they're the
time.
Same.
Never. Can't prove it. I just think O.J. Simpson like trying to put on those gloves like it was the hardest thing.
Oh my god, I know.
Just I don't know. I don't know where the fuck. And who owns gloves that don't fit? Anyways. So, 9 days after the murder, Pavitt and Brenda were formally charged with murder and a warrant put out for their arrest. When they go to arrest them, they had vanished. I love this fucking part.
Oh, yes. They fucking vanished. So, within that time, that 9 days, Rob's funeral was held. Brenda did not show up to her own husband's funeral, where she says he was murdered. So they actually report this to the police. The police think this is freaking weird. They go to the home to try to arrest her because they put out these warrants. She's not there. They're gone. She's gone. Her kids are gone. Pavitt's gone. They actually took off to Mexico. Pavitt calls his daughter from Mexico, asking her to send him money because the police actually put a hold on all of their bank accounts. And at this time, he's totally unaware that his daughter is cooperating with the FBI in this investigation, and her phone is tapped. He makes several phone calls. Like, I believe the first time she actually did send him money, she sent him like $500 or something. And then the second time she said, "I don't have any more money for you." And he actually threatens to kill her, his own daughter, if she doesn't send him money. But she says, "I don't have anything to send." He hangs up on her. 3 months later, February 2002, having run out of funds, Pavitt and Brenda re-enter the United States and are arrested in Hidalgo, Texas. That's down there. So the following month, they were extradited to Oklahoma City. The makeshift family, I should say, had been actually living out of that car for months. Like, them and the kids. She made those kids live out of a car for 3 months. Ugh, so gross. So what actually happened was, Brenda asked Rob to light her pilot light in the garage. He bent over. Pavitt comes out, shoots him with his own shotgun, I'm assuming, then turns to Brenda and shoots her with the pistol after Brenda shoots Rob the second time. Pavitt then runs to the neighbor's house, unlocks it with the key that Brenda gave him, and hides there until the police leave. And then Brenda calls 911. To trial we go.
Hi-ho.
Hi-ho. Hi-ho. It's off to trial we go. This ho. Know. This ho.
This ho. This bitch. Oh, man. I feel like we're shaming our own kind worse than we shame men who do this, because it's just like, this ain't you, baby. Why you fucking, why are you like this?
You know why it is? I think that it's because, and well, for me anyway, sometimes I assume, and this is probably a bad assumption on my part, but most of the time I assume that women are smarter than that.
Yeah, you're really disappointing. You're sloppy.
You're a disappointing woman.
James Pavitt and Brenda Andrew were charged with first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. In separate trials, they were both found guilty and received death sentences. Brenda has never shown remorse for her part in the murder of her husband and claims she's innocent. Okay. On the day Brenda was formally sentenced, she looked directly at Oklahoma County District Judge Susan Bragg and said that the verdict and sentence were an egregious miscarriage of justice and that she was going to fight until she was vindicated.
So stupid. You go for it, girl. See what happens.
On June 21st, 2007, Brenda's appeal was denied by the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals by a vote of 4-1.
Yeah, it was. The one guy out of four was like, I don't know, some testimony shouldn't have been in there.
Why? Whatever, what was dude. It? I want to know what it was. Okay, on April 15th, 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected Andrew's appeal of an earlier court decision upholding her conviction and sentence without comment. While no executions have been carried out in the state since 2015, Brenda Andrew remains on death row in the Mabel Bassett Correctional Center in McLeod, Oklahoma. A date has been set for Brenda's execution, but the state in 2015 was trying to move from lethal injection to a gas chamber, and several death row inmates got temporary stays. Brenda Evers Andrew currently does not have a set date for execution and is the only woman currently on death row in Oklahoma. Isn't that something to write home about?
Yeah, yeah. So, last but not least, there's a twist and you're gonna love it. Guess what? It's later discovered that after Pavitt took out the insurance policy on Rob and named Brenda as the sole inheritor, Brenda went behind his back to another insurance, a life insurance agent, and took out a policy on Pavitt for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Brenda had never intended to live happily ever after with Pavitt after all. Bum, bum, bum!
Oh, what a shitbird.
Yeah. Oh. Can you believe that? This bitch right here.
For 1 minute, come with me on this journey. You are the third mistress of this man. You both you get kicked out of church together, like rebel yell, more, 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 right? You plot to kill his wife with the children at home, all this shit, right? And you're gonna get the insurance money and you two are together only to find out she had the same fucking plans for you and now you're on death row.
Oh yeah.
What?
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? You're sitting there.
Sucks to be you, dude.
In prison over a bitch that had the same plans for you. Owie.
What's the word? What's the word for that? You got vajazzled. Oh my god.
No, bamboozled. Nailed it. You really nailed it.
You've reached the end of our episode. All suspects are innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Join Raven next time on the Sirens Podcast.
Do we have an outro? That's our outro, isn't it?